Now, the question that arises is, what is the significance of this movement in India? This movement, especially, of conversion to Buddhism. Like, why am I talking about it this morning? The reason why I'm talking about it this morning is that it shows, it certainly showed, so far as I was concerned, that great social changes really could be brought about by religious, even by spiritual means. Can be brought about non-violently. Though there is a great deal of discrimination against the untouchables or ex-untouchables in India, though they still suffer quite badly at the hands of the caste Hindus, a great change has in fact taken place, and that change has taken place mainly in the minds of the untouchables themselves. They don't feel any longer that they are untouchables. They feel that they are human beings. They're not animals or lower than animals. They're human beings. And this they were not allowed to feel before. I remember in the very early days, 20 and 25 years ago, when I was going around among these people, I often used to ask them individually. I used to ask men and women, even children, what difference has this conversion to Buddhism made for you? Do you feel different? And they all gave me the same answer wherever I went, wherever I asked. They said that now we are Buddhist, we feel free. Because they felt they were bound by the caste system, weighed down by the caste system, enslaved by the caste system, enslaved by this concept of untouchability. But now they felt free. They were Buddhists. They were human beings. I don't want to emphasize this question of conversion to Buddhism too much. It doesn't have a quite pleasant ring, especially when you think of missionaries trying to convert people to Christianity. But they feel now that they are human beings. And the fact that it's Buddhism that has helped them to feel that they are human beings is perhaps in a sense accidental. But they feel that they are human beings. They feel that they are free. And because they feel that they are free, a tremendous amount of energy has been liberated. When you feel free, you can do anything. If you're a free human being, with self-respect, and with dignity, and with a proper position in society, you feel that you can do anything. So there's been a tremendous movement of uplift on all fronts among these ex-untouchables, especially among the Mahas, who are in the forefront of things. There's been great economic improvement, educational improvement, cultural improvement. They look different. They speak differently. They bear themselves differently. They can look even the Brahmin in the eye. Before, they could hardly look at the Brahmin, even from a distance, couldn't even allow themselves to be seen. So one can see from this that change is possible, not only individual change, but change of a whole society by, as it were, religious, by spiritual means, spiritual ideals, a spiritual vision. And I think this is the important thing, this is the lesson that we can learn. It's not enough to talk. It's not enough to think. We must see actual changes, changes in society taking place around us. In the course of this weekend, at this conference, we've done quite a lot of talking. Well, I've done quite a lot of the talking myself. In fact, I've done exactly twice as much as I expected I should have to do. But all right, that's necessary. It's good to talk. It's good to exchange ideas. It's good to think. But thought and talk, they must issue sooner or later in action. And not only action in the form of, or in the sense of, the transformation of the individual, but even of the transformation of society itself. And I feel that we would not have achieved our objective here at this conference if we simply thought and talked and went away and did perhaps more thinking and more talking, but perhaps just on a smaller scale. We have also to do something. We have also to work. We have also to change society. And I hardly need to tell you how badly society needs changing. We can, of course, pity the ex-untouchables, and in many ways their condition is a very pitiable one, and was a very pitiable one. But in some ways, our position is much worse. I couldn't help noticing among the ex-untouchables how emotionally positive they were, despite their very depressed position, despite their poverty, despite the discrimination that was practiced against them. They are very warm, very friendly, very positive, even left to themselves, a very happy people. Well, I don't want to speak about Europeans generally, but perhaps the English at least aren't always like that, aren't always overflowing with joie de vivre. Even our friends from Europe notice it. So, something is wrong here. There are other larger things which are wrong, which I don't want to go into now, but which must be at the back of all our minds in one way or another all the time. So all that has to be changed. Planet Earth has really a wonderful opportunity, but is in quite, at the same time, a terrible position. We can either have one world, spiritually at least, or no world. The choice is before us. And I hope that the deliberations that have taken place at this conference, I hope the thoughts that we've had and the thoughts that we've heard expressed will help us all to realize that we've got to do as much to transform life, to transform society in the West, as Ambedkar had to transform among the Maharas in India in the East. So I think we should go forth. I hope I'm not taking over Sir George's functions or his peroration here, but I think we should go forth from this conference determined that we're not only going to just think and talk, but we're also going to do. We're going to transform ourselves, and we're going to transform at least our bit of the world.